three split screens show large crowds of people cheering, waving flags and clapping. In one screen, a congregation of men in white skullcaps and flowing robes bow in unison and pray. A large group of triathletes in identical blue caps swim in an open sea. Red-jacketed brokers with arms raised jostle on the floor of the stock exchange. Thousands of sports spectators perform a Mexican wave. The sandy foreshore of a beach is teeming with hundreds of sunbathers. As a ribbon is raised, thousands of numbered marathon runners swarm down a city street. A subway train disgorges wave upon wave of commuters onto a platform. A group of men dressed in white with red bandanas are chased by bulls down a Pamplona street. Crowds of shoppers jump on escalators and squeeze into lifts. Aaron Rolston, late 20s, wearing a baseball cap, crosses a dimly lit apartment. He grabs a climbing harness plus a set of mountaineering carabiners and then heads into the kitchen. He fills up a water bottle at the sink and takes some energy drinks, fruit and a chicken burrito from the fridge.
Hey, Aaron here. Leave a message.
Hey, Aaron. Sonia here again. I know that you're probably going to be away this weekend, but listen, just think about what we're going to play, please, because we have to decide and we need to practice, okay? Anyway, it will be fun, I promise. And, oh, please call Mom, please, because she worries. Already. Okay. Later, A. Bye.
He feels around the top shelf of a high cupboard, but misses a red Swiss Army knife, out of sight and out of reach. He then grabs a video camera and some batteries. On his way out, he fetches his keys off a hook. Nighttime. Thousands of car headlights and taillights stream in a blur of white and red along an eight-lane motorway. Nodding his head to the music, Aaron drives his four-wheel drive Jeep along a quieter A road out of the city. A mountain bike is mounted on the back of the Jeep. Aaron checks his watch and gulps down an energy drink as he roars past roadside neon signs advertising junk food outlets. He takes exit 261, an empty road off the main route. He glances nonchalantly at a road sign that says, "Next services 100 miles. In the pitch black, a group of cyclists riding past on the other side of the road are illuminated by his headlights. He makes eye contact, furrows his brow, and then smiles. Aaron is around 6 feet tall, of lithe, athletic build. He has dark eyes, brown hair, and a wispy goatee beard and moustache. He drives down a desert road, past the sign saying Horseshoe Canyon, Trailhead. He swerves his Jeep slightly from side to side, sending up plumes of dust. He stops suddenly and reverses to a small road sign that reads the Horseshoe Canyon, the Blue John Canyon. He smiles and begins filming on his camera while driving. Reads, this film is based on the book Between a Rock and a Hard Place by Aaron Rolston. Prehistoric cave paintings of human figures in blankets and armed with spears appear on sandstone walls. Aaron comes to a stop on open ground nearby two vehicles and tents. He gets out of the driving seat and climbs into the back of the Jeep. He removes his cap and lies down to sleep on a thin mat. It's Saturday. A sun-baked desert landscape stretches to the horizon. Aaron launches himself on his mountain bike off the roof of the Jeep along a rough desert track. He passes through an abandoned industrial plant, jumping his bike over rusting rail tracks and machinery. He carries a small backpack and wears an orange t-shirt, brown surf shorts, wraparound sunglasses and a bandana over his mouth and nose. He stops and activates his video camera. Then he takes a deep gulp from a tube out of his Camelback water carrier and surveys the landscape before him.
Blue John Canyon. Guidebook says 4.5 hours to the Big Drop Rappel. I aim to take 45 minutes off that.
Headphones firmly in place, he speeds off again, launching the bike over rocks and gullies. His image on the video camera shudders with the impact of the bike on the hard rock face. The front wheel suddenly hits a hole and sends Aaron flying over the handlebars onto the ground. He fumbles for his still camera and takes a photo of himself, grinning. Back on the bike, he launches himself at breakneck speed down a rock face and onto a dusty track. He is surrounded by a vista of enormous sandstone escarpments, scree falls, and cliffs. He locks his bike to a weathered tree and shoulders his backpack. He reaches into a paper bag, pulls out a muffin, and takes a bite. He sets off at a quick pace across an enormous sandstone rock face. Small clouds here and there dot a pristine azure sky. He climbs confidently towards the top of an outcrop. Once there, he stops and slowly turns 360 degrees, taking in the awe-inspiring view of the arid, golden bluffs and cliffs contrasted against the blue sky. He descends at a jogging pace until he looks down and spies two girls strolling along the foot of a shallow canyon. He walks fast along a high ridge parallel to the girls, his long shadow tailing them.
Blue John too, huh?
No. Actually, we're headed for the dome. But I think we're lost.
She's lost.
Hang on.
Aaron briskly descends the hill and leaps directly towards the girls. He grabs their map.
Let's see this. You are here.
We are?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah, I knew that.
And the dome is there.
Oh.
I can take you that way if you like.
The girls look warily at Aaron's masked face.
Oh, sorry, the Friday the 13th there.
He removes his sunglasses and bandana.
I'm only a psychopath on weekdays. Today's Saturday, so...
The girls smile nervously and look at the ground.
Can't take this off. My face.
Nice.
Aaron.
Christy, allow me to introduce you to my friend Megan. Nice to meet you.
It's an honor. What do you say? You're lost? I'm a guide? I'm good.
Why not? Sure.
All right. This way.
So you biked from Horseshoe, huh? Is that like 20 miles?
17 on the odometer.
Oh. I thought it was 17.2.
17.3, actually.
Ah, you're one of those.
Not one of those.
You spend a lot of time out here?
It's my second home. Ah, see? There's the fork right there.
Oh, okay, totally missed that.
Yep.
Glad we bumped into you.
Yeah.
What are the odds, considering we're all the way out here?
Exactly. You go to the one place in America, you're pretty much guaranteed not to run into a weirdo. What happens? All right. So the guidebook says that the route's through here. But I know a better way. The cool way. Guaranteed best time you can have with your clothes on. Although, it's better with your clothes off. It is a bit of a climb.
We climb.
And a bit of a squeeze.
We squeeze.
They traverse a narrow crevice, backs against one side, hands and feet against the opposite wall.
You get us all the way back in here, and then you tell us that you are not a guy.
Well, no. I'm an engineer. This is what I really want to do.
Oh, that's wonderful. Hey, I've always wanted to be a supermodel, but I don't think that's actually really going to work out, you know?
Jesus, what if these things move?
They've been here for millions of years. They're not going to move.
Sure they will.
What?
Yeah.
Everything's moving all the time. Let's just hope not today.
Great.
They stop for a moment and look anxiously at Aaron.
All right. Now all you gotta remember is that everything will be okay.
Aaron drops.
Oh my God!
He plunges into a pool. He swims up to the surface. The girls smile.
Run, my sleeping monkey is revived!
Listen to the guy. He's fine. He's batshit.
Come on! You gotta come down here!
Trust you, I'll kill you, Aaron Ralston! Oh, please. You love this.
They look at each other square in the eye and grin. Then Christy drops. They take photos of themselves jumping repeatedly through the crevice.
So, Blue John is actually named after this guy Blue John, who was Butch Cassidy's cook from, Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, Hole in the Wall Gang.
Yeah.
And they would hide out in these canyons, I guess. But also what they do is they run horses, wild horses, into here, and they trap them at the end of the canyon.
Wow.
That's how they catch the horses.
Oh, wow.
Hey, you want to take one more picture before I go?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Ready? 1, 2, 3, Blue John, Blue Cheese. Well, will I ever see you again?
That depends. Do you party?
Do I party? Yeah, sometimes.
Okay. Tomorrow night, we're actually seriously throwing a party if you want to come.
Yeah, you should come by, have a beer, kick back.
Yeah.
Okay, where am I going?
It's about 20 miles away near Green River. You know the old motel? It's behind that. There's going to be a huge inflatable Scooby-Doo. You can't miss it.
Really? Okay.
Yep.
Cool.
Okay.
It was good to meet you. See ya.
Bye. Scooby-Doo!
Yeah! Rock on!
Aaron disappears down a narrowing canyon.
You think he's actually going to show up?
I don't think we figured in his day at all.
Oh, you liked him.
Headphones back in place, a grinning Aaron stomps on through a sandy floor of a canyon. Nothing moves in the vast, barren landscape except the tiny figure of Aaron as he emerges into a wide opening in the rock face. He checks his watch and the sun for his bearings, then enters a tiny crevice in the rock. He climbs down into a fissure, no wider than 1.5 meters, using a trapped log for support. He takes a photo of the log from below, with the blue sky as backdrop. He continues along the shady gorge. The red, orange, and gold sandstone walls have been eroded by the wind into smooth, organic shapes. He strokes the walls of both sides as he heads deeper into the canyon. He stops above a narrow crevice. Gripping the rock, he swings his body down and horizontally into a tight opening. He squeezes through to the other side. He continues on, through cavernous shadows and bright exposures of sunlight, until he reaches another thin fissure. He tests a boulder wedged in the opening. He traverses down, feet and hands pushing his back against the opposite wall. As he grips the boulder to brace himself, it dislodges itself and tumbles after him. Ah! He comes to rest 15 meters further into the crevice with the boulder pressed against his arm. The fingers of his right hand protrude from the other side of the boulder. His arm is sandwiched between the fallen rock and the crevice wall. With eyes wide open and mouth agape, he looks up from his arm to the thin strip of blue sky at the roof of the crevice. Aaron gingerly feels around the rock from one side to the other. A bloodstain seeps into the porous sandstone where his right arm is wedged. Breathing erratically, he turns around and looks behind him. He turns back and attempts to move his arm. He braces himself against one wall and pulls. The veins in his arm stand out with the physical effort. He frantically checks around the edges of the rock for a gap, digging his fingers down through the bloodstain on the wall. He supports the rock from underneath and attempts to loosen it with all his strength. He grits his teeth and leans into the push. He lifts his knee towards the rock for extra leverage, but the rock is too high. He throws his left shoulder repeatedly at the rock. He clenches his fists and tenses his jaw. He lowers his head and closes his eyes.
This is insane!
He kicks the rock. Then he sits and tries to use both his feet to dislodge it.
Move! This fucking rock!
He lowers his shoulders and pushes the rock as though in a rugby scrum. He leans back, exhausted, eyes tight shut. He removes his rucksack. He takes his water bottle out, holds it between his legs, and unscrews the lid with his good hand. He greedily gulps from the bottle. Then he notices water dribbling down his chin and stops suddenly. He screws the lid back on tightly. He takes his watch off with his teeth. The time reads 3:14 p.m. He selects the stopwatch mode. He looks up high above him.
Christy! Megan! Christy! It's Aaron! Megan! Christy! Megan!
Christy! The fissure is a narrow, shadowy line, barely discernible across the immense expanse of desert canyons and rolling hills. Aaron breathes heavily and fixes his gaze on the boulder.
Think. Just think.
He methodically places his watch, sunglasses, headphones, and water bottle on the top of the rock. He then carefully places his plastic bag of food supplies, climbing rope, and carabiners on the rock. As he jolts his trapped arm, he sucks on the water tube from his camel bag. No water comes out. Aaron checks the battery on his video camera. He takes his credit cards and keys out, finds a place for them on the rock, and checks his stills camera. He then checks the bulb on his head torch. He flashes it on and off. He blinks and bites his lower lip as he surveys his collection of possessions. He picks up a grey multi-tool and selects the longest blade. He eases it out, using his teeth. He passes his thumb across the blade, checking the edge. With a tense jaw, he looks from the blade to his right arm, wedged between the rock. He turns on his head torch. He begins to chip away at the rock above his arm. Fresh, pale dust particles cover the bloodstain. His gaze focuses on chipping away at the tiny gap. He winces and shakes his left hand vigorously as the fingers cramp up. He looks at his watch. The time reads 4:39 p.m. He stretches his fingers between bouts of chiseling a rock. Suddenly the blade slips from his fingers. It lands 40 centimetres below his feet. He stretches his left arm down to retrieve it.
Shit! Fucker.
It's beyond his reach. He shines his light on the blade lying in the sandy hole on the rocky floor. He takes his trainer and sock off and extends his bare foot towards the blade. His toes are still 30 centimetres short, and he slaps the rock in frustration. Then he lowers a thin twig down to the blade by his toes. The twig shakes as it works its way closer. The twig merely nudges a metal clasp on the multi-tool as an ant crawls across the top of the blade. This time, Aaron has bent the end of the twig at an angle and lowers it towards the knife. The twig trembles and brushes against the dusty terrain. He manages to hook the clasp around the end of the twig. Aaron slowly and steadily begins to lift the silver multi-tool. It dances from side to side, precariously hitting a rock on the way up. He stretches his fingers to his foot and lunges for the knife.
Sweet.
He holds the twig between his teeth and removes the knife. He leans back against the crevice wall. He pokes his trapped hand with the blade a couple of times. Then he rubs the blunted edge and blows dust from the boulder.
Nice and dull.
Night has fallen and the crevice is barely illuminated by starlight streaming in from above. Aaron files away at the rock, shivering, as gusts of wind blow dust and dried leaves along the sandy floor. His cap, shoulders, and left arm are lightly powdered in dust from the chiseling work. The blade is now tied to his shorts by his shoelace. His torchlight shines on his swollen, trapped arm as Aaron chips away at the boulder. He glances up at his water bottle. He rapidly looks away and continues filing. He wipes sweat from his face and regards the water bottle once again. Condensation bubbles have formed on it. Gripping tightly onto the knife, he glances at his watch. Beneath a film of dust are just visible the numbers 11:59. He closes his eyes and flexes the muscles and tendons in his left hand, moving his wrist in a circular motion. He stares at his watch again. He continues to stare at the watch. The numbers change to 12 a.m. and Aaron grabs the water bottle. A caption reads, Sunday. He unscrews the lid and the water inside glistens in the torchlight. He tips his head back and sips the water slowly. He closes his eyes and pulls his lips from the bottle. He rests his head against the rock face and looks up at the moon. His nose and cheekbones glow in contrast to the darkness around him. In the bright sun beneath a blue sky, a companion summits a huge boulder. Aaron stands below him, hands on hips, swathed in climbing gear and ropes.
Look at the size of this one, man. Like, how the fuck did this get here?
Back in the dark crevice, Aaron gazes at the moon, licks his lips and swallows. He tosses a looped climbing rope over a rock, holding one end between his teeth. The rope falls back towards him. He keeps trying. The rope continuously falls. Aaron stops, slows down his breathing, and rolls the coil of rope in his fingers. He tosses the loop once again. Slowly, he draws the loop back, and it catches on an edge. Aaron tugs firmly.
Yes.
He clips a set of carabiners and extra rope to the loop. Then he deftly pulls a harness on and slowly sits back. He extinguishes his head torch, stretches his neck from side to side and looks at his watch. 12:41 a.m. Wearily, he rests his head in the crook of his left arm. His feet are planted heavily on the dark, sandy ground. Suddenly, at high speed, sunlight fills the crevice. Aaron's feet leave the ground and his whole body is lifted as the boulder flies up through the crevice. He opens his eyes suddenly in the dim light and wipes his dry lips. He looks at his watch, 12:46. He lifts his head, grabs the multi-tool and starts jumping up and down. Moonlight falls on his broad shoulders as he fidgets with the multi-tool in the space between the rock face. Morning. The sun-bleached landscape shimmers as the heat radiates off the pink and gold sandstone cliffs. Aaron continues chipping away at the boulder. With a determined grimace, he looks up at the light seeping through. He turns off his head torch and sighs. The crevice in which he's trapped runs like a long, thin black vein between two large cliff faces. Aaron pinches the bridge of his nose and looks skywards. A large raven flies directly over him, following the line of the crevice.
Hey!
He watches it disappear, then looks down at the ropes and harness. He flexes his left hand and breathes in deeply. He turns and takes in the full length of the chamber behind him. Suddenly, as the sun rises, Aaron's eyes follow a streak of sunlight as it races through the chamber, dancing over rocks and briefly illuminating the dark cracks and recesses. For seconds, the rock walls glow a deep orange, then yellow. He quickly takes his left shoe off and stretches his bare leg out to the side, where the rays hit the rock face, and he bathes his leg in the warm light. His red and glazed eyes look up to the sky as he touches the glowing rock wall around him. His pupils constrict in the bright sunlight. Next, a little boy lies asleep in the back of a car. The thin dawn light picks out the silhouette of a man reflected in the car window. The man gently lifts the boy out of the car. With the boy cradled in his arms and wrapped in a blanket, the man walks across a rocky bluff. The man and boy sit down on the ground. He places a pair of glasses on the little boy's face and puts his arm around him. They both watch the pale sun rise over a deep canyon. The man smiles down at his mesmerized boy. Back in the crevice, Aaron stares up above him, open-mouthed, and gasps. Darkness envelops him. He suddenly turns on his video camera and looks into the lens.
It's 3:05 on Sunday, April 27th, 2003. This marks 24 hours of being stuck in Blue John Canyon, right where it slots up before the big drop. My name's Aaron Ralston. My parents are Donna and Larry Ralston of Englewood, Colorado. Whoever finds this can keep the recorder. Just please try and get in touch with my parents and give them this tape. I'd appreciate it. I was descending Blue John yesterday when this chalk stone came loose and rolled onto my arm, and now it's stuck. The thumb is kind of this gray-blue color. It's been without circulation for 24 hours. So I think it's pretty well gone. I'm low on food.
He shows the bottle to the camera.
That's about 300, 400 mil. And that's it for water.
He stares directly into the camera lens.
I'm in pretty deep doo-doo here.
A shower of water suddenly falls down the drop.
Hello! Please! There's someone down here! Help! I'm in the canyon! Help!
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 He stares forlornly up at the sliver of blue sky. He closes his eyes and lowers his head in resignation. He looks down at the video camera in front of him. He turns the device round and presses the button to rewind the footage. He watches with a grim-faced expression. Deep furrows line his brow. He closes the lens. He stares at the camera and slowly shakes his head.
Don't lose it.
Eyes now closed, he lifts his head confidently.
Aaron. Do not lose it.
The sun drops, and lengthening shadows race across the smooth orange rock face above. His bike remains locked to a tree. A caption shows the drop in temperature from 101 degrees during the day to 44 degrees at night. Aaron busies himself wrapping all available materials around his body. He uses thick coils of climbing rope around his legs and arm, a plastic bag around his trapped right arm. He tucks his rucksack under his thin t-shirt. Next, he pulls his headphones on and places another small bag around his body. He tightens the rope and coils with his teeth. As the temperature drops, the chamber grows darker. Sweating from the exertion, he manages to throw a thin yellow bivouac bag over his head. The torchlight bounces off the bivy bag, brightening everything around him. He settles back to relax his body in the harness. He produces a chicken burrito. He tears open the plastic wrapper with his teeth, closes his eyes, and takes a small bite.
Tomorrow night, we're actually seriously throwing a party if you want to come. Yeah, you should come by and have a beer. Get back. Yeah, there's going to be a huge inflatable Scooby-Doo.
Scooby-Doo.
A truck drives along a suburban road with a giant inflatable figure of the cartoon hound strapped to the back. The dog is lit up from inside and starts to wave. Mm-hmm. a party, young people are drinking beer. A hand reaches for a beer. Young girls in sunglasses and hot pants lounge on a sofa drinking. People dance and laugh.
Thank you. Oh. Might take a beer as well.
Hands grab beers from a bathtub of ice.
Don't mind if I do.
Aaron stands outside watching. Back in the crevice, Aaron takes the bivy bag off his head and checks his watch. He slowly unscrews the lid of water and raises the bottle to his lips. He peers into the bottle at the small amount of water that remains and shakes his head. He screws the lid back on and carefully places it down. He licks an index finger and brushes it lightly across a bloodshot eye to remove a contact lens. He then places the lens on his tongue. Next, Aaron emerges from a shower. He pulls the shower curtain across, grabs a towel and dries his hair.
Hey, Aaron here. Leave a message.
At home, he puts his contact lenses in.
Aaron, it's Mom. I was hoping to catch you. Are you there? Hello? Okay. Nothing urgent. Dad's in New York, so it'll be a quiet weekend. Call me, okay? Lots of love.
Back in the crevice, he shakes his head. He places a map of the canyon on a rock. Next, in an outdoor gear store, he places the same page in a map book open on a photocopying machine. Brian, the young shop assistant, asks Aaron,
"Where are you going?"
"Don't know yet."
"Right there, Brian.
Maybe Utah, maybe somewhere else.
Have a good one."
"Always do."
"Always do."
Brian is engrossed in a gear catalogue as Aaron saunters past and out of the store. In close-up, a large black ant crawls on Aaron's skin. He reaches up to brush it off. The ant escapes a number of times until, with a tired gesture, he manages to flick it off.
Let's go.
It's Monday, daytime. Aaron busies himself rigging different coloured cords and thick climbing rope together, laced through a number of carabiners. He deftly forms a knot by double looping the rope in one hand while pulling the other end between his teeth. He puts his weight down on it to tighten the knot. He pulls on the yellow rope looped around the higher rock and clips a carabiner through it, joining both ropes together. Aaron pulls down to tighten the intricate arrangement of ropes and cords. He grits his teeth, closes his eyes and pulls down with all his body weight. The boulder doesn't budge. He ties another loop in the rope just big enough for him to step in. Then he springs up and down on the rope so that all the ropes are pulled taut. He grimaces with the exertion of pulling, but the boulder remains still. He stops and rests, breathing heavily, staring blankly up at the sky. Next, high-speed images run in reverse from the ropes around the boulder, up out of the crevice, snaking and twisting through the narrow canyon chambers, past the log he used as support, out into the baking desert landscape, over gently undulating hills, past his bike leaning against a tree, through the abandoned industrial plant, across scrubland, back to his red Jeep, finishing on a discarded but full energy drink and two oranges in the boot. With dark-ringed, half-closed eyes, he gazes upwards. Next, a montage of garishly coloured soft drinks pour from cans and bottles. A surfing couple from the 60s drink Coke. A couple on the beach drink orange juice. Aaron touches his dry lips and grabs his water bottle. There are only a few mouthfuls of water left. He drinks tentatively. He quickly stops, replaces the lid and unzips his shorts and urinates.
Crap.
Then he turns his video camera on. He looks into the lens, then turns the digital display the opposite way.
It's freaking me out looking at myself. Sorry, I hope that's okay. It's Monday. Bummer all day. I tried to set up this pulley all morning, but it didn't work. It's worth a try, but there's too much friction and it's climbing rope, so there's too much stretch. What I could really use is about 20 meters of static wrap rope, 9.8 mil, 3 or 4 pulleys, rack of carabiners, a sling, power drill, and bolt kit. Oh, and 8 burly men to do all the hauling.
The shadows of 8 men appear on the rocks.
That should just about do it.
He smiles wryly, then grabs his water bottle.
I have about 150 milliliters of water left, which should keep me alive till tomorrow night. I'm lucky. I peed twice. Almost pissed my pants. My body's acting really weird. Second time I did it, Camelback.
He sniffs the urine in the bag and pulls a disgusted face.
Oh, smells really bad. But I'm sure it'll settle. It's gotta be chill, like Sauvignon Blanc.
He grins with dry, cracked lips. A lizard scatters across a rock.
No number twos, which should disappoint my insect friends. We'll just have to wait. Let's see, what else can I tell you?
He glances up at the raven flying over.
There's this raven that comes every morning. Hey, I clocked it at 8:17. I'll film it for you tomorrow. Every morning at 9:30, I get 15 minutes of sunlight.
He stretches his bare leg across the sunlit rock face.
I've been chipping away. More to keep warm than anything. I'm beginning to think that my hand is supporting the rock, so when I chip away a little bit, it actually settles more. So I found this great tourniquet.
He stares at the thin rubber drinking tube of his camel bag and stops chiseling. He pulls the tube out of its black rubber sock with his teeth, then uses this to tie a tourniquet just below his right elbow. He tightens the tourniquet by twisting the knot around a carabiner. He grimaces. He tightens the tourniquet even more, then grabs the multi-tool dangling from his waist and eases a small cutting blade out with his teeth. He looks at the blade for a moment and smiles briefly. Then a stern expression returns to his face. He draws the blade repeatedly across his arm just below the tourniquet. He struggles to break the skin and leaves only faint red lacerations. He changes his grip and makes small, rapid cuts in the same spot. He stops and looks down at his scratched, swollen arm.
It hasn't been very useful.
He moves the video camera from his arm to his face.
Lesson, don't buy the cheap, made-in-China multi-tool. I tried to find my Swiss Army knife. This thing came free with a flashlight. The flashlight was a piece of shit, too. I kept it in my truck for emergencies. Not that I'm blaming you, Mom. There is a perfectly great stocking stuffer. no way you could have ever known that I'd get in this kind of trouble.
Next, an adolescent Aaron shoots a home video of his mother and father and 10-year-old sister.
You have to leave the camera guys if we want to watch something that you've made, right?
Yeah. Good job, hon.
His sister, playing the piano, glares angrily at Aaron's camera. Still looking down the viewfinder, filming his sister, Aaron sits on the floor beside his mother. An image of an adult Aaron is reflected in the living room window.
Well done. Okay.
In the crevice, Aaron opens his eyes and smiles into the lens. Hanging limply in his harness, Aaron drifts in and out of sleep. Above, the sun beats relentlessly on the desert. He wakes and rubs his eyes. Then he checks his watch and takes a gulp of water. Resting the water bottle on his leg, he leans against the rock wall and closes his eyes. He then raises his finger to his eye, and the water bottle falls to the ground. He manages to scoop the bottle up, but not before spilling some of the contents. He examines what little water remains and replaces the lid. Next, in soft light, a woman's hand gently strokes a man's naked chest. Then a station wagon stands in the middle of a snowstorm. Inside, 10 young men and women are taking their tops off, laughing hysterically. The women remove their bras and tops. A blonde woman sits in the driving seat and winds down all the electric windows. An icy wind blows snowflakes through the car as the group stick their arms out of the windows. Aaron giggles at the memory. Aaron and the blonde driver make eye contact. She smiles and whispers. Her long blonde hair is speckled with snowflakes as she laughs and dances with everybody in the car. Aaron smiles to himself, his eyes barely open. He brushes away another ant tickling his leg and goes back to daydreaming, head against the rock wall. Next, a woman's hand continues to stroke the naked man's chest. Aaron stirs and opens his eyes. Then, at dusk, a lone car appears, parked in the banks of a mountain river. Snow lies on the ground, surrounded by dark, dense pine trees. In the back of the car, a blonde girl strokes Aaron's chest.
What's that? You know?
Combination. If I told you, I'd have to kill you.
But already you kill me.
She strokes his naked chest, then glides her hand over his stomach and underneath the blanket. She rests her chin on his chest and smiles.
Combination. I think I have it.
In the crevice, Aaron smiles weakly and closes his eyes. Aaron leaps up from his harness. Above the canyon, huge billowing clouds form.
Fuck!
Rain drops begin to fall through the crevice roof as Aaron frantically packs his possessions away. Above ground, thick rain cascades across the rock face, turning it into a glistening grey mirror. Aaron shoulders his rucksack, grabs his water bottle and holds it up to gather the rain. At the same time, he opens his mouth and sticks his tongue out. The horizon darkens ominously. The canyon appears like an enormous black hole illuminated briefly by shafts of lightning. The rain starts to run off the rock face and gather momentum. It grows from a trickle to a rapid flow. Below ground level, the floor of the narrow canyon resembles a rapidly flowing brook, Water cascades down into the crevice and runs over Aaron's trainers. He continues to aim his open bottle high above him. Runoff water now gushes from three directions down into the crevice, forming a waterfall over Aaron. He pulls on the pulley ropes for support as the force of the waterfall threatens to sweep him from his foothold. Water, the colour of tea, rises higher and higher up from the crevice floor. Aaron loses his rucksack and the fallen log over the mouth of the crevice is dislodged and tumbles down. The water has now risen 2 meters as Aaron struggles to keep his head above the surface. He takes a deep breath and drops under the swirling torrent. He pushes frantically against the boulder. He hits the boulder a number of times and it tilts, releasing his bruised and bloody right arm. He thrusts himself to the surface. He swims with the current until he reaches a rock face where he clambers out and staggers up to ground level. He stumbles and lies exhausted on his back, blinded by the rain. Suddenly, he drags his body up and lurches towards his jeep. Next moment, he's driving along a flooded desert road. The windscreen wipers battle against the relentless volume of rain. He makes out a road sign. Roads may be impassable due to storms. He stops the car, stumbles out into the darkness, and runs towards the lights of a nearby house. Through the murky window, a figure reclining in front of a roaring fire stirs. Aaron's face is pressed up to the blurry glass. A blonde woman gets up and approaches the window. Aaron stands unsteadily, desperately mouthing words. His blonde girlfriend stares at him, bewildered. Aaron opens his mouth, but no words come out. Her face moves in and out of focus. She purses her lips, shakes her head, and closes the door. She backs away into the room. As he pleads with her, he suddenly wakes in the bone-dry crevice, mouthing the same words.
Please!
His limbs are bound in coils of rope as he dangles listlessly in the harness. Dawn, Tuesday.
Good morning, everybody out there. Steve, Tom. Good morning.
It's the morning show with Brian Stevenson.
And also coming up this half hour.
Good morning. We set up and going today. 90 for you.
Aaron pops up energetically in front of the camera.
Good morning, everyone. It is 7 o'clock here in Canyonland, USA. And this morning, on the boulder, we have a very special guest, self-proclaimed American superhero, Aaron Ralston! Let's hear it for Aaron!
Hey. Hi. Oh, gosh. It's a real pleasure to be here. Thank you. Thank you. Hey, can I say hi to my mom and dad?
Mom and dad? Mustn't forget mom and dad, right, Aaron?
Yeah, that's right. Hey, Mom. I'm really sorry I didn't answer the phone the other night. If I had, I would have told you where I was going, and then...
Aaron's red and puffy eyes look down.
Well, I probably wouldn't be here right now.
That's for sure! But like I always say, your supreme selfishness is our gain. Thank you, Aaron. Anyone else you'd like to say hi to?
Brian at work.
Hi, Aaron.
Hey, I probably won't be making it into work today.
Get a load of this guy! Oh, wait, hold on. We've got a question coming in from another Aaron in Loser Canyon, Utah. Aaron asks, am I right in thinking that even if Brian from work notifies the police, they'll put a 24-hour hold on it before they file a missing persons report, which means you won't become officially missing until midday Wednesday at the earliest.
Yeah, you're
You're right on the money there, Aaron. Which means I'll probably be dead by then. Aaron from Loser Canyon, Utah. How do you know so much?
Well, I'll tell you how I know so much. I volunteer for the rescue service. You see, I'm something of a big fucking hard hero. And I can do everything on my own, you see?
I do see. Now, is it true that despite, or maybe because you're a big fucking hard hero, you didn't tell anyone where you were going?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Anyone? Oops.
Oops. The grin slowly disappears from Aaron's face as he stares balefully into the camera. He looks away and nods to himself. His red eyes begin to water, then he shakes his head in self-disgust.
Mom, Dad, I just want to take this time to tell you that the times we've spent together have been awesome. And I haven't appreciated you in my heart as I know that I could. Mom, I love you, and I wish that I'd return all your calls. I love you guys. And I'll always be with you.
He nods slowly and switches off the camera. He stares at the blank screen and scratches his wispy beard ruminatively. Then he unscrews the water bottle, puts his whole mouth around it, and drinks the remaining water. Aaron licks around the edges of the water bottle and begins nervously touching his face. He tries to stick his tongue into the bottle to lick the last dregs of water. He wipes his mouth and places his hand over his heart and stares at the wall. Gasping for air, he massages his chest, then pulls manically to loosen the yellow cord around his neck. A vision of his smiling girlfriend appears, stroking his chest. Inhaling deeply, he thrusts the small blade with full force into his right arm. He releases his grip, leaving the multi-tool sticking in his arm. He stretches his neck from side to side, then tightens the carabiner on the tourniquet. He takes hold once again of the multi-tool with a strong grip and leans his body weight over it. An interior view of the arm appears, with the tip of the blade jammed against the radius bone. He shakes his head and bites his lower lip. He swiftly pulls the blade out and releases the tourniquet. Contemplating the wound, he dabs blood on his finger and sucks it. He wipes his mouth and licks his lips. He tenses his jaw and grinds his teeth, staring at his arm. Wednesday. A cloudy amber liquid slowly rises through a light blue tube. The liquid rises up and enters Aaron's mouth. He almost gags. He replaces the urine-filled camel bag on the rock.
It's no Slurpee. It's like a bag of piss.
He reaches for the camera. He rewinds to the footage with Christy and Megan. The images are of them leaping into a cobalt blue underground pool. He grins. He zooms in on Christy swimming in her underwear. He pauses the image. Christy is wearing a tight vest top, revealing some cleavage. His hand fumbles down towards his fly. He unzips his shorts and puts his hand inside. Christy kisses the lens, he closes the camera shut. He starts scratching with the multi-tool on the surface of the rock wall above the boulder. Light from the head torch passes over the wall. On it are visible the letters A, R, O, N. With headphones over his ears, he suddenly jerks around and peers into the darkness behind him. He turns back and begins working on the rock again. Once again, he quickly turns around and looks behind him. Later, he drifts off to sleep. He awakes with a fright and tries to turn his torch on.
Fuck.
His torch is now defunct. He turns on his camera. He points it towards the darkness and takes a photo. An inflatable Scooby-Doo appears briefly in the flash, and he recoils. Then he checks the photo, which reveals an empty chamber in the rock. Next morning, flies buzz around Aaron's trapped arm. Aaron leans against the wall, staring vacantly at the cloudless blue sky, mouth agape. Suddenly, scores of aeroplanes crisscross the sky, leaving white contrails. The image of a basketball stadium appears, full of fans and bright lights. Aaron's girlfriend turns to the camera.
You don't even want me here, do you? I'm gonna go, Aaron. Is that what you want?
She regards him intensely. A clean-shaven Aaron stares ahead at the basketball game, ignoring her. She gets up and pushes through the crowd.
Come back.
Aaron lies on the rock and reaches his arm out.
You're gonna be so lonely, Aaron.
As she storms off, Aaron watches her with a blank expression. As the crowd claps and cheers, Aaron leans back in his seat and blinks slowly, unmoving. In the crevice, he addresses the camera.
I'm holding on. Time's moving really slowly. My heart's beating really fast. I swear to God, it feels like it's beating like three times as fast as it should be.
Aaron.
old man in a Stetson and bandana suddenly appears over the lip of the crevice.
Hey, Blue John.
The old man nods and walks away. The image of his girlfriend's face appears on the bivy bag.
Rain.
Been thinking about you, girl.
Been thinking about you, girl. I know how I am. I tried to do everything where I was. I tried.
Aaron shuts his eyes and smiles dreamily. A chamber in the crevice appears bathed in golden light. In the center is a large flower print sofa. His parents sit down as many other people from Aaron's life enter.
What are you guys doing here? Eddie? Tom? Hey guys, what's going on?
Eric?
Hey.
They all stare at Aaron with serious expressions.
You look like the hole in the wall game.
Aaron grins.
Dorks.
His young sister leans down over a banister.
Found Aaron.
She plays the piano with the adolescent Aaron. Then she appears as an adult in a wedding dress.
Sis, I'm sorry that I won't be at your wedding. I know that I promised to play. That we'd play. I'm sorry. I know it'll be a good one. 8:15, there's no Raven. 8:20, 8:30, my Raven didn't come.
The battery symbol on the camera screen is 4/5 empty.
You know, I've been thinking. Everything is just comes together.
You're gonna be so lonely.
Have a good one.
Always do.
Later.
It's me.
Mom, I was hoping to catch you.
I chose this.
Dad's in New York, so it'll be a quiet weekend.
I chose all of this.
Call me, okay? Lots of luck.
Aaron strikes the boulder with a small rock.
This rock. This rock has been waiting for me my entire life. This rock! In its entire life, ever since it was a bit of meteorite a million billion years ago. There in space, it's been waiting.
A meteorite falls from the sky.
To come here. Right here. I've been moving towards it my whole life. The minute I was born, every breath I've taken, every action, has been leading me to this crack on the Earth's surface.
Photographs appear of Aaron as a baby, a child, a teenager, a young man. The battery symbol appears with a white line through it. Mustangs leap across the crevice opening. Aaron's head is wrapped in the bivy bag. He struggles for breath and rails against the rock wall at his back. He lashes out at the rock, and he shatters into desert dust. The letters Aaron Ralston, R.I.P., 75-03, appear etched into the rock face. Aaron lies collapsed on the boulder as an ant crawls over his face. A large black ant gently bites the skin underneath his eye. A finger of sunlight extends towards his sleeping face. He opens his eyes as the black ant nips him on the cheek. He rouses himself slowly and stiffly. Aaron raises himself up to peek over the top of the boulder to the far end of the chamber. There on a sofa sits a 5-year-old boy. Aaron smiles warmly with tears welling up in his eyes. The child stares back at Aaron, smiling. With the boy standing on Aaron's feet, he holds his arms and takes giant steps. The boy sits on Aaron's shoulders, laughing as Aaron tickles him under his arms. Tears well up in Aaron's bloodshot eyes, and he grins a cracked smile. The boy walks towards the boulder, staggers a little, and disappears. Aaron's eyes are drawn back to his trapped arm. There's more than this. He grips the sides beneath the boulder with his feet and raises himself up. From underneath the boulder, his arm is very swollen and blue. He grits his teeth and leans sideways, putting stress on the trapped bones. The upper radius bone bends and snaps. He grips his twisted forearm and braces himself again. He presses his right hand just above his elbow again. Steeling himself, tensing his neck and jaw, he begins to pull the ulna bone sideways. He concentrates his gaze on the arm. Then he torques himself to one side with his feet up against the rock face. He grins manically. Then he calmly and deliberately brushes dust from his eyes and selects the short blade out of the multi-tool. He coldly regards the 2-inch blade and tests the edge on his thumb. He plunges the blade into his arm and begins a methodical cutting motion. The cut gets progressively deeper and longer. The wound begins to bleed and he grimaces. With blood-drenched fingers, he removes the blade and places it between his teeth. He then takes a black rubber tube and ties it around his arm. Thick drops of blood fall to the floor. Using his teeth, he tightens the knot, then clips on the carabiner and rotates it. He pushes the plier attachment deeply into the gash and cuts. Thick arterial blood plops onto the porous, dusty floor. He then stabs the shorter blade in and pushes. It touches a nerve. He inserts his index finger and hooks it round the thin, white nerve strand. He maintains his finger in position around the nerve, his lips bared from his teeth. He releases the nerve and rubs his bloody fingers on his t-shirt. He bites his lower lip and watches the time change to 11:17 a.m. With the short blade now, he attempts to sever the nerve. The nerve snaps in two. Aaron bares his teeth in a rictus-like grimace as he slams against the rock face. As he trembles with shock, the young boy appears before him, gazing into his eyes. Aaron tenses his jaw with determination and begins to hack through the flesh. Sweating profusely, he cuts into his arm again and again as the young boy looks on. Aaron hacks deeper and deeper as the purple muscle and tendon begin to split. Suddenly, he falls back and away from the boulder. Rooted to the spot, he stares fixedly at his severed, bloody stump. His face is white and covered with a sheen of sweat. He slowly lifts his gaze to take in the red, dripping mass of bone and tissue squeezed between the boulder and rock wall 5 meters away. He steadies himself, staining the porous rock with a bloody, smudged handprint, and slowly turns to view the high crevice walls surrounding him. He winces slightly and grips his severed arm. Then he reaches for a plastic bag and wraps it around the stump. He wraps thick cord around his arm to keep the bag in place. Then he straps the camel bag under his arm and round his neck as a makeshift sling and shoulders the climbing rope and rucksack. He walks away a couple of steps, then halts and turns round. He fumbles in his rucksack and produces his stills camera. He points it at the boulder. His bloody finger sticks momentarily to the camera button. He takes one last deliberate look at the chamber.
Thank you.
He grabs more climbing rope from the floor and walks away through a narrow corridor of weathered rock. He grimaces as he jars his wounded arm against the rock walls. He leaves a trail of crimson scrapes and blotches along the smooth rock as he enters a steeper, darker chamber. A muted, golden glow is visible at the mouth of the chamber. He steps through it and out into dazzling sunlight. The narrow crevice suddenly opens up onto the high ledge of an expansive cliff face. He removes his baseball cap and squints at the sun. He hops up and down in an impromptu jig. He slips slightly and catches sight of a dirty pool of water 30 meters below. He kneels at the edge of the cliff and stares longingly at the water. As he turns away, he sees several pitons fixed into the rock face. He smiles broadly, cracking the caked blood around his mouth. He bends down to the pitons and kisses them. He attaches his carabiners and ropes to the pitons and descends the 30-meter drop. He threads the rope through an abseiling device, looks down and steadies his breathing. Gripping with his left hand, he leaps away from the cliff. He walks himself carefully down the cliff, letting the rope run gently through his hand. He looks down at the pool as he gets tantalizingly closer. He smoothly reaches the foot of the cliff and sits on the ground. He disengages from the rope and walks briskly towards the pool. He kneels down and falls headfirst into it. He gulps greedily and splashes his face. He fills his bottle with the murky water and drinks greedily. Water tips out down his chin, all over his stained front. He stands and heads towards the wide canyon opening, discarding his rucksack, harness, and ropes. He checks the position of the sun, grits his teeth, and marches forward. Erin is a barely discernible dark spot on the vast desert landscape. Sheer gorge cliffs rise several hundred meters, and the canyon stretches back for miles. Two black raptors with wide wingspans hover above, casting fleeting shadows on the cliffs. Erin suddenly stops. Before him are ancient rock carvings of enormous human figures. He regards them in awe. Aaron staggers on, clutching his sling close to his body. His foot catches a loose rock and he stumbles to the ground, jarring his arm. He blinks slowly, wearily, and looks up at the trail ahead. Birds of prey circle above. He lurches back to his feet and limps on, directly towards the burning sun. He comes to a halt, cracked lips open, gasping for air. 100 meters away, he makes out the backs of three figures shimmering in the rising dust. Blood drips from his sling. He forces his legs to move, opening his mouth wide, but no sound is forthcoming. The figures continue in the opposite direction. He swallows hard and shouts. The figures stop and turn. Aaron waves at them. The three people, a man, woman, and child, start running towards him. Aaron closes his eyes. The family stand bewildered in front of Aaron. The woman gives him a water bottle. She furrows her brow as Aaron gulps all the water, spilling plenty down his front. Next, they set off together.
Do you have a phone?
Yes, but no signal. You should stop and rest.
I gotta keep going.
I want you to run. I want you to run ahead.
The woman and the boy dash ahead while the man stays back to walk with Aaron. Next, a young man and woman come running towards Aaron, handing him a water bottle. He guzzles the whole contents. Aaron slumps to the ground and removes his left trainer with his blood-stained hand. He rubs his foot, then he drops his chin to his chest and closes his eyes. The young man mouths the words, "Wake up," and shakes Aaron by the shoulder. Strong gusts of wind blow dust over Aaron's slumped figure as he raises his head to see a black helicopter landing. People wave at the helicopter. Aaron shields his eyes as his cap blows off. A man in a flight suit sprints over and pulls Aaron to his feet. The rescuer grips Aaron's shoulders and runs him towards the helicopter. Aaron is bundled into a seat just as the rotors lift into the sky through swirls of dust. Aaron leans back against the seat, eyes closed, mouth slightly open. His baseball cap lies on the ground far below, covered in a layer of sand. The helicopter disappears into the glare of the midday sun. In split screen, crowds of commuters alight from a subway train. Thousands of spectators cheer wildly in the stadium. Aaron appears swimming underwater with an amputated arm, then skiing on top of a mountain in deep snow. He appears at a press conference, arm in sling, bewildered by the flashing cameras and microphones thrust at him. More images of Aaron scaling mountain peaks and ice-climbing waterfalls. He smiles into the camera, giving a one-fisted salute. Finally, he swims up towards the sunlit surface of a pool. He breaks the surface, leans his amputated arm and good arm on the side of the pool, and wipes his eyes. He smiles. In front of him, sitting on and standing around a flower print sofa, are 30 or so of his family and friends. Over the image of the little boy he saw in the chamber, a caption on screen reads, "Aaron's premonition came true. He met his wife Jessica 3 years later. Their son Leo was born in February 2010. An image of Aaron standing on a snowy summit, both arms aloft. On his right arm is fitted a prosthetic climbing axe. The caption reads, "Aaron continues to be a climber and canyoneer." The real Aaron Ralston sits on a sofa smiling with his arm around his wife as she cradles their baby son. Aaron appears walking along a ridge in thigh-deep snow. The caption reads, "He always leaves a note to say where he has gone. James Franco as Erin Ralston. Kate Mara as Christy. Amber Tamblyn as Megan. Treat Williams as Erin's father. Kate Burton as Erin's mother. Clemence Poesie as Rana. Original music by A.R.R. Rahman. Screenplay by Danny Boyle and Simon Beaufoy. Directed by Danny Boyle. In association with Pathé, Fox Searchlight Pictures, Film 4, and Warner Brothers Pictures.